if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod. Welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm the end of an era.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It really is.
It's sad.
Well, thank you for joining us for two more episodes of Sliders this week. We are discussing The Exodus Parts 1 and 2.
Yes, we are. Finally, we made it. We made it.
Can you believe we're here?
I know. Oh, it's all downhill from here. Well, no, wait. No, that. Plenty of there's great episodes coming up.
Yes, absolutely.
There are. They're diamonds in the rough.
Yes, but before we get into anything, we wanted to throw in a new segment here.
Yes, a new segment. We call this By the Way. What happens is our episode comes out and I'll start listening to it, you know, on my commute, you know, just like our friend iReactions does over at sliders.tv. And as I listen to it, my brain starts going and I start thinking, oh man, we should have mentioned this, or oh, we forgot about this part or that part. So I thought I'll just throw it in here. A couple things that we know that we may have failed to mention in the last episode or last episode or two. So this one I remembered I was going to put it in the notes, and then I just, for some reason, I forgot about it. In the last episode, Quinn comes onto the world, the flashback world, and he says the natives look primitive, you know? He says at least they're human. And I'm thinking, why would he say at least they're human? Because they always meet human people except for Fire Boy, you know? I thought that was weird that he said that, and I thought it was weird that he sort of made the assumption that this world was a very primitive world just because he saw this one group right there, that the world was primitive as a whole, which that's not always the case. That could have been like a cosplayer, you know, little convention or something like that, you know? I thought that was strange that he based it just on that one little group that he saw.
You know, plus the Cro-Mags. Ultimate
right, exactly. And the Cro-Mags, so. Yeah, exactly. It just seems like the non-human beings that they've met are very few and far between, you know? So I thought that was a weird thing to say. At least they're human. It was just odd. I think maybe they were trying to imply because of the people underground didn't look necessarily totally human, you know? I don't know. It was just weird, I thought. And then there was another thing I read when I was looking up stuff about Exodus. I came across this little explanation here, which I thought, well, that fits. That works. There was the episode, the Sly Like an Egyptian, where they had the Egyptian timer, and it was counting down from like 13 hours. And people wondered, why was it counting down, you know, on this world? What would be the reason for that? And this person theorized that it must be a ceremonial type timer because it had the scarab on there, you know. They said that could have been placed on the sarcophagus of the pharaoh, and only royalty would have it then, because it's something that you would place with the dead pharaoh in the tomb. If you work out the timing, the pyramid was supposed to be sealed at the time that the timer would have reached zero. So the idea was that the sliding equipment, the sliding was part of the myth of moving on to the next world, you know, for that Egyptian culture. So that's why it was counting down. It had been set to activate a vortex as soon as the pyramid was actually sealed, like on schedule, which I thought that's pretty clever.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting to treat it as a more ceremonial thing than an actual thing that they use.
Right. So it makes sense. I don't know if that's what their plan was, but I like the explanation.
Yeah. So there you go. New segment, By the Way.
by the way.
All right, so getting into this week's episodes, the first episode today is The Exodus Part 1, written by Tony Blake and Paul Jackson, with story by John Rhys-Davies.
Yes.
Yes. And directed by Jim Charleston. This originally aired on February 21st of 1997.
You wanted to see me, sir?
No, Captain, I did not. But you've given me no choice. You've handled this whole incident with Dr. Yarabek very poorly.
Airman Cooper said you gave him orders to shoot Yarabek on sight. Now, how the hell am I supposed to command a squad when I don't know what's going on, sir?
I don't recall giving you permission to speak freely, Captain. Arrogance may be admired in a fighter pilot, but not in an intelligence officer, which is what you are now. Don't you forget it.
Yes, sir.
Out in space, a star explodes, being picked up on a military satellite, which a lieutenant reports to a Dr. Yarabek. During the conversation, she is attacked with a syringe on the back of her neck. As she drops to the floor, we pull back to reveal the attacker injecting the syringe into himself and now has obtained the appearance of the lieutenant. We cut to our sliders sliding through and landing finally nicely on a comfy couch. Air raid sirens blowing in the distance, the town around them seemingly deserted, save some homeless people and looters. One of the indigent men explained that the war between Russia and the U.S. has pushed everyone to take cover in bomb shelters. Immediately, an out-of-control car comes around the corner, crashing. The man inside, Yarabek, pleads with the sliders to warn them about the pulsar trajectory being 86, not 87, and then dies, not just from the crash, but from a gunshot wound. The Air Force shows up, asking if the man said anything, and when our sliders refuse to play nicely, the captain, Maggie Beckett, orders them into the car. Quinn creates a distraction, allowing our team to overpower Beckett and her soldiers and escape to Yarabek's office at a neighboring school, finding his evidence showing the pulsar's trajectory on a path to destroy Russia. Meanwhile, Maggie gets a dressing down from her commander, Colonel Rickman, for letting Yarabek get away. He commands her to find the sliders, thinking they may be Russian spies working with Yarabek to warn the Russians, even though he has worked with America the last 20-plus years. Beckett goes to Yarabek's office and finds the sliders there, taking them prisoner. Beckett and Rickman interrogate Quinn to no avail until they bring in a scientist named Jensen, who understands parallel dimensions and has been trying to access other dimensions as well. In return for Quinn's help with their sliding efforts, they agree to let the sliders go, Jensen agreeing to give Quinn the ability to track wormholes and imprint coordinates, something that could help them get home someday. Remy, trying to find a way off the base, runs into a boy, Malcolm, painting on the walls of a secluded part of the base. As the two bond, we learn that the boy's mother was the lieutenant attacked with a syringe, and he shows Remy a way off the base, only to discover that the way out has recently been booby-trapped with an invisible electric fence. Lately, as Malcolm and Remy's friendship grows, they discover that Malcolm's father has also been attacked with a syringe, now the latest of some 20 people going into comas the last 3 months. As more and more people fall into comas, we see the person doing the attack is Colonel Rickman himself. While Quinn and Jensen work on the sliding equipment and timers, Arturo discovers that the pulsars are only the lead piece of a collapsing galaxy, meaning that not only will Russia be hit with radiation, but the whole planet as well, before the sliders are due to slide. Rickman comes up with a plan to begin evacuation to a parallel world, asking Wade to pick qualified personnel and civilians to evacuate first, based on performance evaluations, usefulness, and blood type, and Beckett and Quinn go sliding, scouting new dimensions for a habitable world. After a few missteps, they end up on what appears to be Earth Prime, but the reunion with Quinn's mom turns deadly as Maggie finds she can't breathe on this world. And after a hospital's doomed attempts to help her, Quinn activates the timer and slides back to Maggie's homeworld.
I need to compile a list of people who will be transported to the new world. I understand you're computer savvy. I can't trust one of my own people to do it. They may not make the cut.
Choosing who lives and who dies? I don't want that on me.
Listen. If you don't help me, I may not get the job done in time. And then no one will be saved.
What would you want me to do?
I need you to compile a list of the top people on this base, weighting it by their performance evaluations. Those people have earned it.
Wait a minute. What about the president? All those people in Washington.
I never spoke with the president.
What?
All we'd end up doing would be taking his friends, politicians, People with no usable skills, no value to anyone. This is the most egalitarian method I could think of.
Okay. Where do I start?
All right, so we have a fair bit of trivia here on this episode.
Yeah, so for the beginning, there were some altered lines when they initially meet Maggie. Instead of how it went down with Quinn introducing the timer like he did, what he does is he looks over at Maggie's car and he says something like, "I don't know if we're all going to fit over there in that car." And when she turns to look at the car, he attacks her, and the sliders go into, you know, attack mode, and they take him down just like they did in the episode.
Yeah, it seems a bit weak.
Well, it does, but we'll get into the discussion about why I like that better than I like what actually happened.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. The theory of pulsars was a little bit different. The way that Arturo explained it, there was a different explanation for what pulsars are. And there was a poster of Rocky IV that was prominently displayed in the area they were on, because Rocky IV is the one where he fights the Russian, mm-hmm. So it fits the episode. There was a scene of them attacking the guard to get into Yarabek's office, because it was, obviously locked up. There's a scene with Maggie coming up looking for the guard with her soldiers. Like, go find the guard. There's got to be a way to get in. Just, a little extra stuff. There was a scene with a doctor walking around the coma patients, which I don't know. I can see kind of why they cut this. She was walking around the coma patients and talking about what she was finding on the coma patients, but she wasn't talking to anybody. Like, there was no one in the room that I could tell from the script. She was just like narrating what she was doing, which was just odd, unless she was doing the recording. Sometimes coroners do that. They make like a recording while they, do their autopsy or whatever.
Yeah. Awfully cliched. Approach.
Yeah, but there was no one in there, and they're coma patients, but she was walking around saying, "I can't find a common thing between them. I don't know what it could be," and she's talking about, "I tried this and this and that and the other thing." And it just seemed weird. Like, she was just trying to give exposition, and because there was no one around, she was telling us, the audience, I was like, "Oh, okay. I guess that's why they cut that. I can see that." Originally, the interrogation scene was going to be all of the sliders together instead of just Quinn. And they were really not taking it seriously, giving them, bad answers and not just basically being difficult for them. I'm not sure why they cut it. I have theories on why they cut it, because they want that Quinn Maggie relationship, that interaction, I think, is why, maybe that's why they cut that.
No, and why pay the whole cast for a day of filming?
If there you go.
You only have to pay one of them.
That's true. You got that too. This would have been very weird. There was supposed to be a subplot with Rickman actually liking Wade, liking her. He comes up to her and he's talking softly to her, and he's and tells her, "Get whatever you need from the PX. You need clothes or food or anything. It's free. You're my unique guest." It was very strange. And that comes up in another couple other, moments, because, Wade was talking to Rickman, and Rickman says, "I never talked to the president," because he would only want to take his friends sliding. And Wade, says, "Well, my opinion of you has just gone up," and then they looked at each other like one of those moments, when a guy and a girl look at each other. I'm like, ah, oh, that would have been weird.
Yeah,
that's been very strange.
That's very weird.
Originally, Remy and Malcolm, when they met, they didn't meet, in that little tunnel area. They met upstairs and they were talking about baseball, and had come around to his mother being in a coma, and then the fence thing happened. So it was basically the same idea, just a little bit different delivery. There was a scene with Malcolm talking to Remy, talking about how he's going to go to a Lakers game with his dad next week, and they got tickets to Universal Studios, and Remy knowing that it's not going to happen. That's where he, starts to think about telling Wade, put him on the list. It was kind of a nice little scene, I can imagine Clavant really eating that up, just mm-hmm. The emotion and everything, knowing that you're not going to the Lakers game. Yeah. This world is going to, and also in that conversation, there was a mention of Malcolm's real mom in San Francisco, his birth mom.
That kind of comes and goes in the episode.
Yeah, it does. There was a lot more technobabble with the scientists. So there was just more of that stuff in there. And there was a scene with Rickman telling Wade that he needs to take O negative blood because they're universal donors. And there was a point that was made that it was revealed in Dream Masters that Arturo was actually O negative blood as well. Mm. So that kind of adds another level to it there. Stevens, Jensen, his timer apparently had a wideband geographic stabilizer, which is why they got from where they were all the way to San Francisco. That's what Quinn says in this deleted scene. But then that sort of implies that maybe the Egyptian timer was limited to the old radius like they had in the first two seasons, and it didn't take him all over the place, because he was in this scene, he was kind of shocked that they ended up in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Or no, Maggie was shocked that they ended up out there.
Right.
So, yeah. Oh, and then finally, on Earth Prime, Maggie and Quinn are there, and he makes a reference to the Azure Gate Bridge world, you know, about how everything could look the same, but we landed on this world where everything was the same except the Golden Gate Bridge was blue.
Yeah.
So, a little callback.
Medication.
I don't know. She started coughing and then she collapsed.
Cyanotic excessive muscle usage. Help here. Can you step outside, please?
No.
Quinn,
I've got an intubator. She's
Quinn,
closing
please.
Up. 1 milligram FEIV push.
Quinn.
Damn it! I can't get it in. Get me a trach set. Gotta cut.
There's no
gotta
time.
Get an airway.
No time. What are you talking about?
Can someone
I gotta
get
go.
People out of here?
I gotta get her out of here. Or she's gonna die.
What?
You see this? Her. This is what took me away, and this is what will bring me
Where's
back. I promise.
No, no, please.
About please.
I swear I'll be back.
Quinn.
What the hell are you doing?
It's called sliding.
What are you doing?
Hey.
What's going on?
All right, well, let's get into our discussion of the Exodus Part 1. So we kick off with some graphics.
Yes.
Star explosion.
Yes, we do.
Very odd way to begin, but I think it does its job, tells us what we're going into, gives us just a taste.
Right. I was confused because I thought that maybe a satellite had exploded because of all those things that were shooting out. Like, I was like, is that what pulsars look like? You know?
Yeah.
And like, according to like some of the messages in time that I had seen, no, they don't really look like that.
Yeah. It's a strange visual representation of what they're going for here.
Right.
Yeah. If something exploded, a whole bunch of identical things aren't going to fly out of it. And,
right.
Yeah, along with that setup, we also get this setup of military personnel being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this woman, this military woman, and she's attacked. But the thing that threw me was that she was on the phone when she gets attacked. And immediately I'm thinking, like, why wouldn't you wait till she hung up? Why would you alert somebody else to what you're doing by attacking this person while they're on the phone?
Wait till she hangs up, then do it, you know?
But, you know, still, it's good. We're setting up mystery here. Stars exploding, people being attacked from behind.
And we don't know who it is because the face changes to the lieutenant's, the military woman's face. So we don't even know who it is yet.
And it looks quite good. You know, the graphic that they used to sort of imply that the face has changed into this other
person. It was pretty good. Yep.
And so I'm liking this. Great setup. And this is, you know, all before we even see our sliders, because the next thing is that they're going to get a very cushy landing on a couch, which was fantastic. And an awesome practical car stunt.
Yep, that looked good. Yep, looked good, definitely. Because it wasn't CGI. They didn't create a CGI car. And
exactly.
try to manipulate it.
This is classic Hollywood filmmaking here. We'll have a car screech around the corner, go up on two wheels and flip over and explode. And this is our introduction to Maggie Beckett.
I gotta ask, because this just, I don't know. To me, Quinn was very cocky here in this whole introduction here, because there's no reason at all I don't know why he shows her the timer. I know it's a distraction. Okay. It's like, well, what is that? You know? And so he drops it. I mean, that's so like, that's another thing that happens in movies a lot where, you know, oh, you want this? Okay. And then you throw it down, you know, on the ground. And then when they go for it, you attack them. It's like, that's so typical. But I was like, why show them this thing? Because it's just, you're creating the typical timer in peril cliche that we've had so many times again.
Yeah. I completely agree. He had no reason to pull the timer out and throw it on the ground. I mean, this is the thing that you use to travel between parallel worlds. You're just going to throw it on the ground like
just
that.
Just toss it.
Yeah.
No big deal. Just a timer, you know. parallel worlds. What's the big deal? So yeah, I just thought it was odd. That's why I said I liked the deleted scene where he's sort of, you know, standing there and he's like, I don't think we're all going to fit in your car, and just motion, looks over. And then when she gets distracted, to me, that's better because it doesn't put the timer in peril. It doesn't even reveal that they have a timer, anything about it at all. Not even to say, like you said here, you know, they're strolling away after they lock her in the car trunk. They just stroll away like, what a nice day it is here. You know, it's like they don't care. It's like, yeah. What the heck? His whole posturing, like the name's Quinn Mallory. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you can get a little full of yourself, man.
Yeah, it was a bit off, really. The whole thing, the timer, lock her in the trunk, and then stroll away. No need to run from these military people we've just, for all intents and purposes, assaulted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and of course, they're not going to give up the information that they got from this dying Dr. Yarabek, who is talking about trajectories and things like that. A lot of things are harkening back to previous sliders here, and this thing is reminding me of Last Days, with the asteroid coming towards Earth. The trajectory had changed, and it's definitely going to hit us, and...
Right.
Yeah, so that's what's reminding me here. And as we go through, I'm going to bring up other episodes that things remind me of.
So I was wondering about this. You know, in Earth Prime, they said that Yarabek worked with the military. So I was wondering, like, wouldn't that possibly be the case here as well? Why assume that the military was bad? It just seemed like all of a sudden, oh, the military's coming. You know, they're bad. We gotta, you know, get away from here, trap them in the car and get out of here. Like if Yarabek is known for working with the military, maybe he was trying to get the military to know about the trajectory, you know, but we kind of assume here that he's doing bad.
Yeah. It is quite presumptuous to just assume that Maggie is up to no good.
Yeah. It goes along with what I said. It's just like making these assumptions that like something is what it's not, just based on very limited evidence, like with that primitive civilization and then this as well. And there's another one too that's coming up.
And then of course we're introduced to Colonel Rickman, who is played by Roger Daltrey.
Yeah.
And Roger Daltrey is of course the lead singer of The Who.
And we use the word played very lightly here.
Because I have to ask the question. I mean, I think he's trying to affect an American accent, but really he sounds British, and it makes me wonder how a British colonel got to be in, you know, such a high position in the American military.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Because he does go on about saving American lives. That's what we're here for. And I'm like, okay, so he's supposed to be American, but the accent's not really working for me.
No. I mean, I assume they probably just wanted the guest star, have his name there as the guest star. And maybe they just figured, well, we'll work around that. You know, maybe he can do an accent, maybe he can, but we can get him for the right price, so let's get him.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Roger Daltrey's not charging top dollar as a guest star. And honestly, I'm not sure people would really know who he is, you know, unless you're really, really big fan of The Who.
Right. If you're into older music, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or you've seen other things that Roger Daltrey's been in, which I think he does. He's done a whole bunch of, like, one-offs on TV shows, so nothing... Yeah. Too notable.
The Who is his big thing, of course.
And then we move on to Dr. Jensen. And for some reason, they hold it close to the chest about him being Maggie's husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's the whole thing that, you know, they pick up the sliders because they go to Yarabek's office, which was a stupid move, really. As if they wouldn't think that the military would look for them there.
Yes. The guy just died. Yeah, they're going to come look.
Yeah, so they're captured. And we get into this whole thing about helping these people because pulsars are coming to kill them all. And this is making me think of Logan Sinclair, really. They're just resetting up the Logan Sinclair story. We're going to help you, but hey, are you going to turn out to be evil or what? We don't know.
Right, yeah, that's true, yep.
Yeah, Arturo doesn't really kick up a stink about it like he did with Logan Sinclair. Like, he was really against sharing sliding technology with those people.
Right.
But here he's sort of on board with helping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know why the change.
And then, of course, it's all the way down to, hey, we have the ability to track wormholes and store information in the timer, which you don't have, but we need your help to create the wormhole in the first place and stabilize
the power chip or something. Yeah,
it is the exact same thing that we got with Logan Sinclair, for all intents and purposes. So, yeah. Again, harkening back to previous episodes. Now, I don't know if they're doing this for nostalgia purposes, because we are about to lose Arturo.
Right.
They sort of like try to do like a greatest hits or something like that. Or they're doing it because they had all these story threads that Fox wouldn't let them carry on. And they're sort of trying to bring them back to create a culminating story.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably more likely.
Which isn't a bad thing. I'm liking it. The story's sort of moving forward.
Well, yeah, I like when they, you know, I do like the overarching, you know, the idea of an overarching plot line. You know, I think that does nicely tie things together that way.
Well, and the main thing I noticed is that this really is the introduction of Maggie and Quinn with Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guys really don't have a lot to do, so they sort of just give them these side bits. You know, Arturo working with Jensen, Remy meets with Malcolm, and Wade gets given this job by Rickman to start, you know, trying to track people down. You know, so they're kind of just doing all these side things. And I guess Remy's side story is probably the more important one.
Yeah.
Him and Malcolm. Malcolm turns out to be the son of the woman who was attacked at the beginning, or he's the stepson, and he's waiting for his dad. And I think this was a good setup, you know, a nice little thing for Remy, especially with Malcolm being an artist, and
it
sort of gave Remy someone to relate to, you know, from his childhood.
Right.
So, yeah, I love the setup of Remy and Malcolm together.
Yeah, you know, this, like what you said right there about him being an artist, I didn't think about that, but that's probably why they changed the script from them talking about basketball or baseball or whatever it was, because this does give them more of like something in common. They're both artistic, you know? So that's true. Yeah, I like the whole Malcolm idea, and it's good because going forward, we have a little bit more continuity with the episodes and we see characters return. You know, because we'll see Malcolm again.
Yeah, in the meantime, they've helped Jensen build a timer that will let them return, which I don't think we've seen before. We've never seen them leave a world and then come back to it.
Right.
So this is new. And what they're ostensibly doing is scouting a new colony, trying to find a world that is perhaps not inhabited, or, you know, eventually they find one that's just got a primitive race of people on it.
Right.
But this was quite good, you know, just Quinn and Maggie going out together and scouting these worlds. I'm not too sure about the first one they went to, which was giant people.
Right, right.
That was a bit weird.
Now, why was that? Because there's a Messages in Time about this, too. Why was it weird for you?
I don't like the idea that people are bigger on this world. It just seemed unlikely.
Okay, all right. That goes along with the Messages in Time, I believe. So we'll get, when we get to that, we could talk more about that then.
Yeah, but still, it was good. You know, they end up in this cave with the rabbit, and Quinn's trying to tell her not to approach it because things are never what they seem on a parallel world. And she is so arrogant. She's just like, leave me alone. I'm just, you know.
Yeah.
I'm Maggie Beckett, and I'm a military woman.
Yeah.
And, of course, the rabbit has giant fangs, and she immediately learns her lesson.
What I thought was funny was Maggie's like, whoa, I had a horse that size. I'm like, really? You had a horse that huge? Because that bunny was huge. That was a giant.
That was pretty huge.
I'm like, you had a horse that big, huh? All right, whatever. I'm like, I think maybe the CGI people got a little bit, you know, they made it a little bit too big, perhaps.
Yeah, and obviously she probably hadn't seen what the end product was going to look like because they're working on a green screen. But it is a funny line.
Yeah.
And it is. I think all this stuff is sort of softening us up with Maggie. You know, she's still a hard-ass military woman.
Yeah.
But it's sort of just planting those seeds of, you know, she's going to become a regular character, so maybe you can start to like this person.
Yeah, it takes me a while to like her, like, you know. And like, I think it was mentioned I think it's Messages in Time where they said this, but it's not like that it's a bad character. It's just that we lose such a great character in order to get this character, which makes it just, you know, like it hurts you, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I say that they're planting the seeds of starting to maybe like Maggie.
Yeah.
And it is going to take a while for that to grow into anything.
Oh, yeah.
I think they maybe try to go too far with it in this episode, you know, trying to set up the whole love connection with Maggie.
They do.
As well, it's way early, way too early for it.
Well, yeah, like when Jensen and Quinn are working on the thing and he's making comments about she's a good-looking woman, you know, and it comes out that, you know, they're actually married. It's like, well, that seemed odd for him to say.
Yeah, exactly. I do like the vortex, though.
That's a neat vortex.
I know that every time they've encountered an alternate version of the vortex, mm-hmm. you know, with the Cro-Mags and then Logan Sinclair, and now this time it's red again.
Yeah.
So they were, well, Logan Sinclair's was kind of like an orangey thing, but yeah, I don't know why they need to go with a red vortex every time. And this one had like strikes of lightning that sort of seemed to go down into it and everything. You know, the only exception is the Egyptian timer that they got, which tends to just look like their own usual vortex.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but it's, I don't know, it was still interesting looking. And then of course we keep going with this plot of somebody brain sucking people's brain juice.
Brain sucking, yep. It just sounds silly, but well, you know it is. Anyway. Yeah.
But this brain juice sucker is really cold.
Yes.
Because he first attacked Malcolm's stepmother, and then as soon as Malcolm's father shows up, he attacks him too.
Yep.
Sucking his brain juice out.
Sorry, Malcolm.
And immediately Quinn and Maggie are captured by Maggie's alternate on a parallel world.
Right. I like this scene. I thought that was pretty cool. For her to meet, you know, herself and really hammer it in. This is what happens in alternate dimensions.
Yeah, exactly. This is awesome. This is what Sliders is, running into mm-hmm. your alternates, you know, trying to figure them out. And how are they different?
Yeah, her double is like exactly like her in this case.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is, you know, where Quinn sort of gives that drop line, you know, we've been fooled before.
Yeah.
Sometimes worlds are so, you know, down to the minute detail, but there's always something that's different. And again, they're trying to set up Maggie as a softer character because she has to sort of put her own ego aside and mm-hmm. talk to Quinn about how they should be able to escape.
Well, yeah, and she's so, like, she is very harsh, and she's going to be harsh for a while. It mm-hmm. takes a while for her to really soften up.
Yeah, exactly. So when she's telling him about, you should compliment her, she'll love hearing that from a man. And then, of course, you know, Quinn's given the sly smile, you know. Is that really mm-hmm. how you feel? And she says, it's only because you intrigue her. You don't... It's not that she likes you or anything.
Right, right, right.
And of course, it's that cliche thing about how she's going to come in with the timer and it's counting down. And, you know, I honestly don't think that would have been a good idea. For all she knows, it's a bomb.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So she's going to carry that around as it counts down to zero.
And why bring it in to the people? You know, like, just say, we have that thing locked up. Why is it counting down to zero? You know?
Yeah.
Like, military-wise, like, tactic-wise, it was not good.
Yeah. Even if they had to do something to it once it hit zero.
Right.
Why bring it to them to give them the opportunity to do it?
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, a little cliched, but, of course, they just managed to get away.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little lackluster, after all.
Now, Rickman tells Wade to make that list of people who can go to the New World, and he's keeping it quiet from the president, which, okay, I understand why. His explanation is very good, but I'm wondering, why wouldn't Wade tell her friends that? Why wouldn't she say, hey, I'm making this list, but he's not, you know, he didn't tell the president about this whole thing. Isn't that a bit, you know?
Exactly. They can trust each other.
Yeah, they can.
And they can make the right decision together.
Exactly. So it was a bit odd to me. I was like, why wouldn't she just tell him? Say, hey, this is a little weird, don't you think?
I mean, I can understand her liking the idea. You know, Rickman explains it pretty well about, you know, the president will just bring all his friends and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So we'll just take people that are on the base here.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I love the drop line, too. He says it's mostly because of her computer skills.
Yeah.
You're good with computers, right? You can compile a list for me.
Right, because people are talking about Wade's computer skills there. Hey, you see that new girl that came in? She's really good with computers. What? Okay.
Yeah. But, of course, the big twist is that the brain juice sucker is Rickman himself.
It was telegraphed pretty clearly, I think. You know, like, once you met him, you kind of knew.
I know. Like, even though they sort of panned away before you saw his face or panned up and the face had changed, going by the silhouette, it's pretty obvious who it was. Because he always walks around with that, you know, military beret on. And
right.
He has a distinctive silhouette.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Then Quinn and Maggie show up in Earth Prime.
Yes.
And, happily enough, it's right in front of Quinn's house.
Yeah. his house and the real mom this time.
Yes.
Not Bizarro Quinn's mom.
Yes. So, yeah, it's convenient that they slid right in front of Quinn's house, but...
Even the way he's like, hey, that's my house.
Hey, that's my place.
Hey, isn't that lucky?
And they come up with this whole thing about how he'd bought her a Mother's Day present or birthday present or something.
Yes.
To sort of convey that, yes, we are home.
Because it was her birthday on the day he slid.
Yeah, which
he
never said happy birthday to her that morning.
No, never.
Not once. He was too busy grabbing bacon and eggs on toast and running out the door.
Exactly.
But, no. It's for convenience purposes. They've got to try and convey that he is home. He's definitely here.
Now, here's what I have to say about that. All right. The whole thing, Maggie can't breathe in this world. Fine. I get that. But like, I don't think I know that's what they want and that's what they're saying, that that's Earth Prime. But I don't think it is because I think they went to Earth Prime when Into the Mystic Quinn sent them there.
Right.
And we learned in that episode that, Jake the gardener finally fixed that damn squeaking fence. So it's not going to squeak anymore unless it's just one of those fences that, it needs to be constantly oiled or whatever. And it's, maybe it will start squeaking again. But based on that, I would say, if we're going to go with the squeaky test as the way to tell if you're home or not, I don't think that's where they're, that's actually Earth Prime.
Because it's not valid anymore.
Yeah. It's like, as we know, dimensions can be almost exactly the same. So who's to say that there wasn't another dimension where it was his mother's birthday and he didn't just get her the same exact gift? It could happen like that.
Yeah. It could just be a Zero Gate world.
Again. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm going to say, I know that they said it's Earth Prime and that's what we would go with for the actual story, but logically, I would say, I don't think that's Earth Prime. I think that's just another very similar world, which, it is close enough. So unless, maybe it's not the Azure Gate world, maybe it's Cyan Gate world or something like that. It's a different color, but whatever. It's close enough to home as they were ever going to get, I guess.
Yeah. And that's how the episode ends. Maggie can't breathe. And what's going on here? He has to go to the hospital. They're trying to save her. The timer counts down. He says, I got to get out of here, Mom. I love you. And off he goes. Takes her back.
I'll be back. Yeah.
So a good cliffhanger.
It is. Now, when they aired this, did it air 2 separate weeks?
I believe so, yeah, as we get into the stats for the next episode.
All right. Oh, yeah, that's right. I can see it right there.
Yeah. But, all in all, I think it's good. And I'm loving that it's a two-parter as well, giving it plenty of time to tell the story and let the episodes breathe.
And now it's time for another episode of Yes, Ma'am, with Maggie Beckett.
I will find you. I never forget a face.
This has been another episode of Yes, Ma'am, with Maggie Beckett.
All right, well, getting into the second episode today, The Exodus Part 2, written by Joseph Anderson, Tony Blake, and Paul Jackson, directed by Jeffrey Levy. This originally aired on February 28th of 1997.
Man, what about us?
Remy, we'll make the transfer and we'll get home just as soon as we finish helping them, okay?
No, it's not okay.
Look, Quinn, the Pulsars will be here in less than 8 hours. Look, the longer we're here, the more of a chance that something is going to go wrong.
Wait, I'm not turning my back on these people.
So stay if you're so all fired up to help them. But Wade and I will go home now.
What about your little buddy, Malcolm?
We'll take him with us.
Remy, he'll die on our world.
He'll have a lot better chance at a hospital on our world than he will here. They could put him in one of those bubbles or something.
We're not leaving.
Wait a minute. Who the hell put you in charge? You're the reason why we're in this mess. It's all because of you that we've been taken away from everything that we knew and everybody that we love. Or have you forgotten that?
You never let me.
Well, it seems like it has slipped your mind now. Doggone it. I mean, what it comes down to is that we mean less to you than a bunch of strangers.
It's not true.
Look, just give me the timer.
No.
Give me the timer.
Remy! No!
That's enough! I am sick of you acting like God. You're just a guy who screwed up and stuck us with the bill. The hell with you.
Remy, wait.
The hell with you!
Please! Sometimes you can be such a bastard.
We begin on Maggie's homeworld, the radiation causing casualties all over the world. The sliders are elated that Quinn has found their world's home coordinates, but Remy and Wade want to slide now using Maggie's timer, but Quinn won't back out on the deal he made to help this world out. After time in the infirmary, Maggie with Quinn go sliding again and eventually find a world that is hospitable, albeit more primitive in terms of evolution, and the plans to evacuate begin. Meanwhile, Rickman continues to drain people's brain fluid, storing it for later use, and decides to lie to the people on the base about being able to save them all by sliding, while Arturo runs Jensen's numbers again to see if they can actually take more people with them. Arturo confronts Rickman about being able to take more people, but he says they will go with the number they have planned off of. Arturo calls Rickman unsuited for command and is attacked within minutes, his brain fluid being drained out partially as Wade and Remy happen upon the attack and stop it, causing Rickman to run away. Jensen shortly happens upon Rickman as he injects himself with brain fluid from yet another victim, and he is shot as Malcolm witnesses the murder. Wade and Remy report to Quinn about how Rickman's disease pushed him to steal brain tissue to stay alive. Together, the sliders go to find Rickman, and as he prepares to slide, he fires a shot at Quinn, but the professor steps in front, taking the bullet so that the remaining three sliders can escape. They hide out with Malcolm until their timer hits zero, and then using their new wormhole tracking ability, they slide to the new world, where Rickman has ordered the natives taken captured to be used for slave labor. The sliders tell Maggie of Rickman's plans, and together, she and Quinn go to find him, but he manages to escape, sliding to another dimension. Wade, Remy, and Quinn hold a funeral tribute to Arturo, after which Maggie joins them in sliding to track down Rickman and make him pay for his crimes.
Dr. Jensen, have you the final numbers for the slide?
Yes. But it's lower than I thought. I can only guarantee safe passage for 140 people.
Are you certain?
Maybe 10 more, but the strain on the vortex is dangerous enough.
I'd like to run those figures again.
No. You stick with 140 and plan around it. This is Colonel Rickman. Establish a base-wide feed in 10 minutes.
What are you going to say to them?
We found a way off. But everyone's going.
You're going to lie to them to the very end?
You want me to tell them they're all going to die? This is not going to turn into the last days of Saigon. We need to maintain order till the slide is complete. Now, if you're so gung-ho in saving more people, be assured no one's going to stop you giving up your place on the lifeboat.
All right, so let's delve into the trivia here.
All right, so in this one, the whole scene where Quinn and Remy come to blows, there's a scene after that where Remy just is off walking, like he's like ticked off, and Wade finds him. He's like, I just need to walk off this anger. I'm just so angry, you know, and that leads more into the scene about asking if he got or if she got Malcolm on the list yet.
Right.
There was also, in the original script, there was no conversation about the natives' mating ritual that you saw. So that was something they added, you know, after, you know, to further try to get that relationship going, mm-hmm. you know, to set the seeds, so to speak. So I'm kind of glad that wasn't there originally. It's like, yeah. Cause that was, yeah. In the original scene, Jensen goes off to fix the power generators. That's how he ends up alone, and that's how he finds, Rickman, cause he is apparently knowledgeable about the power generators and how to fix them. So that's what he was doing off on his own. The printing scene where Wade is printing off the names of the people was a lot longer, and it was just extra lines here and there. And it's like, there was no reason for that to be that long. So right. Obviously why they cut it. The scene with Arturo confronting Rickman was longer, and I would have liked to have seen that more because Arturo's a lot more pressing about it, I guess. I don't know what the right word, like he just really presses against Rickman about, you know, taking more people and how he's unsuited for this. And right. It was pretty good. You know, it's pretty good. When Arturo does get shot, and rather than just saying, get them home, you know, and then looking at them and say, sliders, he actually tells them, you know, in his broken speech pattern, you know, as best as he can, he tells them to go underground. He basically go underground, you know, get them home. And then he looks at each one of them, you know, and he says, I love you all. And then he says, "Sliders." And that was his last line. I wish they had done that. I wish they had left that in there, you know, because that, it was a much more emotional ending as he looks at each one, tells them, you know, "I love you all." It's like, oh man, the feels are terrible.
Heart wrenching. My heart can't take it.
Yeah. I noticed in the deleted scenes that Remy calls Arturo Max several times. Again, it's just odd because they usually don't call him by his first name.
Yeah, you know? We called it out in Paradise Lost how odd it was.
Yeah, so it was in there too, like with Remy calling him Max. I'm like, that's just weird.
Yeah.
There was an extended scene about going into the catacombs with Malcolm leading them there. And for whatever reason, I don't know why this was in the script. Like, I don't know who thought, oh, let's put this in the script because it makes sense to the story. Malcolm picks up a cat. There's like a cat walking around the base and he picks it up and Quinn's like, I don't think we need to take a cat with us. We got enough problems as it is. And Malcolm just brings the cat with him. Takes it to the new world. And once they're in the new world, Malcolm's like, you know what? I'm going to name the cat Max. No.
Let the cat go. He can go and hang out with Henry the dog.
Exactly. Anyway, so yeah, that was just odd. There was a scene that explained how the new timer tracks the wormhole. And this was a neat scene because Quinn starts to talk about the new timer and how it does this tracking thing. And Remy, or maybe it was Wade, she says something like, you're going to have to talk to us like we're humans now. The professor isn't around. You know, we don't understand what you're saying, basically. You know, so he has to, you know, like dumb it down a little bit. He says, well, this red light means that we picked up on a photon trail, you know. And Remy says, you know what? We should learn about that timer, anything we can, because if anything happens to you, we got to know how to work it. So that was a neat scene that I think they should have left in there, because that's important as it comes to later episodes, you know?
It was tying it back to Logan Sinclair again, because she talked about tracking photon trails rather than
right. Oh, yeah, exactly. Vortexes exactly.
themselves. Yeah.
Well, I just thought it was neat because Remy's saying, hey, we lost the professor. He's the only other one who could have fixed that timer. So if something happens to you, man, what are we going to do? We're going to be stuck? Or maybe we should learn about it. You know, maybe we should figure out how this thing works, too. There was, when they got to the new world, there was a Jeep chase with Rickman. So they got into like a big old-fashioned Hollywood car chase, which ends with Quinn catching up to him and then grabbing his briefcase of the brain fluid vials and breaking them.
Right.
And, you know, they have another showdown there, but then he gets away. And then finally, there was a scene that was written that made it clear that Rickman's timer was corrupted because he activated it early, so that he was going to be doing random sliding as well.
Okay, yeah. No, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I didn't think of it either until they mentioned that. And then I was trying to think ahead, like, can he just leave at, like, in the future episodes, does he just slide at will, or does his countdown too? I couldn't remember. But I guess with this scene, I don't know if they followed it or not, you know, kept it going like that or not. So we'll find out in the next couple episodes.
Yeah. Well, he does, you know, have to improvise and slide to get away. So it makes sense that he would be randomly sliding just as they are.
Rembrandt. Don't. Good man.
Yeah. Not a day goes by. I don't carry the weight for having dragged him into all this.
Good. Boy.
Cue ball. It was Rickman. He's the one who attacked your professor. But we found these in his office.
He got some kind of disease in the Gulf War. The only way he can survive is by injecting himself with the brain fluid of certain donors.
All right, so let's get into our discussion of the Exodus Part 2. So Jensen raises concerns and jealousy about Quinn and Maggie.
Yeah.
And this really just came out of nowhere.
I know. I was like, what? What? Whoa. They were just like being like happy together and just like working on the timer. Everything was good. All of a sudden, you know, Maggie gets hurt and he's like, I've seen the way you look at each other. I don't know why I gave him that accent right there. I'm like, what the heck? I turned him in the first season Remy. I don't. Sorry, Jensen.
Yeah, but it does. It's just, it's out of nowhere. Quinn has locked Maggie in a trunk.
Yes.
And sure, they're trying to be cordial towards one another, but if anything, you know, it kind of shows that they don't really like each other very much.
Right, yeah.
They're going to bring it up later when they sort of look like they're going to go and kiss.
Yeah, yes. It just felt so forced. This whole really thing seems so forced.
Yeah. Plus, Quaggy doesn't sound as good as Quaid.
Quaggy. Oh, my God. That sounds horrible. That sounds like something out of, like, Lord of the Rings. Watch out for the Quaggy. Oh, my God.
So, yeah, they really are forcing it here. And like I said, I think it's way too early to be sort of trying to go down this storyline.
Definitely, definitely.
But, you know, in the meantime, the promise of returning home opens up some old wounds for Remy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like this scene. You know, Remy and Wade come in and they're just like, yeah, man, we're ready to go. The time is right there. You've got it in your hand. Open up the vortex. We'll go.
Right.
And he and Arturo, I guess it's like Arturo sort of just says, like, he assumes that they're just going to stay and do what they need to do, help these people like they said they would. And Quinn sort of goes with that. And of course, Remy's just like, no, if you want to stay, you go ahead. But we'll go right now, thank you. Like I said, I think it's a really good scene, and of course, Remy gets very heated, and he punches Quinn in the face, and Wade calls him a bastard. So it's a really well-done scene. But at the same time, I was thinking, he really could just open it and let Remy and Wade go home.
He could totally. Just open it, go, and then that's it.
Yeah, because what are they doing there?
Yeah.
You know, besides Remy interacting with Malcolm, which they bring up, by the way.
Yes, they do.
He says, you know, we can put him in a bubble or whatever.
Yeah, but, like, there's nothing more, really, that Wade and Remy can do there. You know, it's all down to the sliding stuff now.
Yeah, and I think Wade probably could have finished her job by now. Like, a list would have been compiled.
Mm-hmm.
So she's really got nothing to do. Remy and Wade could leave. So that threw me off a bit, but it's still a great scene.
I like it, too. But, like, I read reviews, and I read some of the messages in Time, and I read something about what Clavant said as well. They don't like this scene.
Really?
Like, I think it was Clavant that said that it just felt out of character for him to actually punch Quinn, which I thought was odd, because, like, in my mind, look at, these guys have been sliding for 3 years, or whatever, you know, however long it's been, and they've been, like, away from their home. They finally have the chance to go home, and here's the one who got him into the mess saying, well, no, we're not going home yet. We're going to take care of this problem first, then we'll go home. Like, I'd be pissed, you know? I'd be like, fuck you, give me that thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's because we dealt with this in the early season. I mean, like, we talked about how, like, it went on and on with Remy. He was constantly bringing up the fact that, oh, Q-Ball and your mad scientist making me in this mess and my sweet chariot lost there. <Sweet chariot. laughs>
Russian cabbie lottery fan's going to love you for that. He loves your impressions. There you go.
There was a lot of that in the early episodes of the show, and he got past it. But, of course, it's going to come up, you know? This is it. It's right here. Earth Prime is that one slide away.
Yeah,
and there is Quinn telling him, no, we're not going.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he's going to get angry. He's going to throw it back in Quinn's face.
Yeah.
And the fact that he gets violent about it, you know, it shows that still deep down inside, he is very, very upset that he was dragged into this.
Yes.
He didn't want to have to do it.
Exactly.
So it was fantastic. I loved it.
I mean, these guys are friends, yes, and they trust each other with their lives. But, you know, at the end of the day, like you just said, you know, he wants to go home. He wants to be back home again.
I'm very surprised that the actors didn't like the scene.
Yeah, I was surprised by it too. Yeah,
definitely the strongest scene of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So Remy ends up with Malcolm. And, you know, there's been all this talk about the New World. Rickman starts calling it the New World.
Yes.
Which I like, you know, sort of tagging it with that sort of moniker, I think is very telling, you know, about how they view what they're doing here. Because ostensibly they are. They're going to a brand new world. This is where Remy starts promising Malcolm that he's going to get him a spot on the list to get there. And Wade really struggles with making these choices because, you know, for every person that she puts on the list, that means another person is off. You know, it's not just saving lives, it's condemning people to die as well.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's a very Wade way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it was done well. Yeah, I like that. It fits.
And of course, the whole, this is where it brings up the whole thing about how Rickman has started telling her that it's not just performance evaluation now. It's down to blood type and DNA and things like that. I think if I was Wade, I'd be getting a bit sus on that. I mean, that's a weird request. Yeah.
Well, that's why I said it's weird that she doesn't say anything to anybody.
Yeah. And she does. She kind of just says it to Brammy that one time, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be getting a bit suspect on Rickman at this point.
Yeah. And like, he's like, Remy at that point, he doesn't care what, he's not even listening to what she's saying about blood type. He's just, get Malcolm on the list. Get Malcolm on the list. That's what he wants. He's not paying attention to what she's really saying.
And then, of course, later, it turns out that Rickman had added the coma patients.
Right.
To the list as well, because I guess he knows that they're viable brain juice donors for him.
I guess. It was so weird. Like, I thought, why take the coma patients? Because you already got their brain juice. I guess they have more, but there's got to be more people that he could have taken. I don't know.
And it seems that everybody on the list is O negative anyway. So
right. Yeah.
What's it matter?
Yeah.
But yeah, he continues to be a creepy brain juice sucker all over the place.
Mm-hmm. I'm confused a little bit about why Maggie and Quinn ended up at odds after they returned home. Like, she's mad at him, you know. It's like, if we were in the same situation, I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't have done the same. You know, it's like, he didn't really jeopardize anything. He just tried, they were on the world. They had a half hour on the world to scope it out. He took her to the emergency room and then they slid away. I don't see how he jeopardized anything.
Yeah, again, there's nothing here that's telling us that these two have something going on.
Yeah.
As, Jensen had thrown out there.
Right. They're just against, they're not happy with each other. It's like, I don't know. I just thought it was an odd thing that they were doing there. Like, why is she so angry? He didn't do anything. I mean, maybe she's angry because he didn't continue sliding after that, maybe?
Yeah, well, and she says if the roles were reversed, she'd leave him behind.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, thanks for letting me know. And at the same time, it's kind of trying to change it up a bit because Quinn has known that, the other guys would always be there for him. The four of them worked as a team, whereas at this point, she has no interest in being friendly.
Right.
Or working as a team, really. She's,
yep.
She just wants to try and save her people. You know, it's moving along. But still, yeah, like I said, there's nothing that's showing me these two should be connecting on any kind of emotional level.
Yes, yes. It's a very adversarial relationship right now.
Yeah. And then while this is going on, Rickman is giving orders to kill civilians who are trying to break into the military compound.
Right. Did you notice his moment where he seemed regretful?
No.
Yeah, he orders it, and then like he kind of like as the shots fire and you hear the people screaming, they focus in on him a little bit, and he kind of closes his eyes and turns his head a little bit, and I'm like, what was that? It just seemed like he was like regretting the decision. To me, that's what it seemed like, and I was like, that's an odd, like, I mean, it makes sense, to me, like, oh, that's how a person would react normally, but he's supposed to be the bad guy, He's not supposed to care about it. But to me, I saw that and I was like, that's weird. A weird choice. I mean, as an actor, you would do that. But as that character, it just seems out of place for that character.
I can't say I noticed. I always pictured Rickman as quite the ruthless type.
Yeah, and that's what I did too. And that's why when I saw it this time, after the shots fire, you look at him and he kind of turns a little bit and his eyes are closed. Like, I didn't want to do that, but I had to. It was a weird moment for me.
Especially since we'd already established that he's going around
killing people.
Killing people, too. Yeah. So, yeah. So what's it matter if he kills these people just outright?
Right.
So, Maggie and Quinn find a less than ideal world, which I like,
Uh-huh.
It would be really off if they found, like, the perfect world where, like, there's no humans here, and, the sun is very good, and we can survive here,
Right.
The fact that they find a world that is inhabited, it's just, like, these primitive people.
Yeah.
And Maggie says it's less than ideal, but, hey, what other choice do we have? I think that works really well, The odds that they were going to find the perfect place to live were very remote, so...
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to settle for this.
I think this next scene here fell to the whole thing about a flubbed line that they didn't fix, with the whole thing with Parker last in the Paradise Lost when he said, if you eat this and become one of us, then we'll sacrifice you. That whole thing.
Yeah, I ended up playing that clip in the episode too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, what? All right. Quinn looks at the natives and he goes, yeah, it's never time travel. This world's just a couple hundred thousand years before us. A couple hundred thousand years. That's a long time. That's a long time. I don't think they look a couple hundred thousand years before us. You know, maybe a couple thousand, maybe, you know, because 100,000, that's, you know, 200,000 years ago. Is that what that's, you know?
That's a long time.
That's a very long time. So I thought that was, that must have been like a flub line. Maybe he meant to say a couple thousand years or a couple hundred years and he just got mixed up. Because I was like, that's a very long time. They're not that primitive.
And it's kind of going back to what you were saying at the beginning of the episode in our By the Way segment.
Right.
Yeah. How can they just assume that this whole planet is. Is like this, you know?
From one based little on this, sample.
There are still tribes of people out in the middle of the Amazon or something like that, you know? People who still live like this.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
They could just be in one of those areas. For all they know, the rest of the planet is perfectly civilized.
Exactly.
But yeah, anyway, they do try to get in the new romance here, the quaggy, as it were.
And, yeah, it's out of character for Quinn, I think. He knows she's married, and he goes in for the kiss.
Yeah, it's a bit... Yeah, it is. It's just, I've said it already. It's way too early for this garbage.
Yes, yes.
But Arturo uncovers that they could take at least 100 more people with them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Rickman just won't listen to him. This is where, of course, Wade and Remy uncover that Rickman's taking coma patients as well. So things aren't gelling right here. And of course, Arturo confronts Rickman about it.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, Arturo is attacked by Rickman in the shadows. You know, the fact that Wade and Remy sort of stumble on it, I think was good because it does allow Arturo to sort of continue to interact with them. You know, he's not just immediately put into a coma and, you know, and then at the end of the episode dies. I think that would have really been weak. So the fact he's still sort of, he's cognitively there, but of course his attack has left him quite impaired.
Oh yeah. It was kind of sad. It was really kind of sad to see him like that.
You know? It really was.
I mean, he did a good job, but it was just like, oh man, you know?
It's impacting you even more.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
I also noticed that Wade mentioned she was a candy striper at one point, so she also has that on top of being a computer whiz and former waitress.
There you go. She got many talents. Many talents, my Wade.
Yeah. She's done a lot in her short life. And then, of course, Wade and Remy uncover what the deal with Rickman is, why he's doing this, why he's injecting himself with people's brain juice.
Yes, a fungus.
Some kind of fungus he picked up during a war.
Yes, the Gulf War, I think they said.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how medically accurate this is.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that if you do inject yourself with people's brain juice that you take on the physical attributes of their face.
No, you don't think? You don't think that happens?
But
hang on, I'm gonna try it. I got a loud neighbor upstairs. I'll be right back.
But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird explanation.
Yeah. Well, they need a reason, so.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess so. This is as good as any. This fungus attacks his brain, and he needs people's brain juice to live.
Mm-hmm.
And then to top it all off, Jensen stumbles on Rickman killing somebody, and Rickman kills him, as witnessed by Malcolm, who runs away.
Right.
So things are really starting to fall apart for Rickman here.
Yes.
At the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And not looking good. But, of course, they're setting up to take everybody to the new world, and all the sliders are locked away in a room.
Mm-hmm.
After confronting Rickman. And this is it. This is the end for Arturo. Rickman fires off a shot. It hits Arturo, and he goes down, and Rickman escapes to the new world. What were your thoughts on the final moments of Arturo?
So I remember when I saw it, I was just like, because I was not on the internet when these episodes aired. You know, like they had the computer. I was, like I said, I was in college. This aired in, what was it, 97? Yeah, 97. Yeah. So that would have been I would have been a senior in college. And I was watching it, and they had the computer. I didn't even have email, I don't think. I knew about websites, kind of. I didn't really understand everything that was out there yet on the internet. I didn't know about news groups or anything like that. So I had no idea that he was going to die. Like, I had no access to behind the scenes stuff at all. and didn't talk about this with anybody, you know, because I didn't know anybody else who was watching it. So when it happened, it was a big shock and surprise. I was like, what? No, you can't. What the heck? Like, it was a big deal. I was like, I can't believe they just killed him. Surely he's not really dead. And then immediately, you know, even back then, I thought, well, wait, they had a professor back on that one world. Maybe that was the real one, you know, like start trying to, like, it was like going through the stages of grief, like bargaining. Oh, wait, maybe they can get that guy back. Come on, you got to get that guy back, you know? It's like, I had no idea about what was going on behind the scenes or anything at this point. So it was pretty big, pretty impactful to me.
And his final word being sliders.
Right. That was good. It was deep. Yeah. I was like, yeah. Oh,
and it's like we were saying in the trivia, I think it could have been a bit more impactful if he had told them that he loves them, yes. Loves them all,
mm-hmm.
Make it a real somber moment. But I guess at that moment too, you know, we'd seen him so deteriorated from his attack by Rickman. He was really slurred in his speech and stuff like that. You know, it's almost as if he'd had Alzheimer's or something like that. You know, I've had relatives who would have had Alzheimer's, and it's really difficult to see a person like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did have that slurred speech and stuff like that. So I think as a final moment, you know, all he could muster was to look at them all and say sliders.
Yeah.
And then die. I thought, it was very, very well done.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't want them to die, but they didn't. I mean, it was done. It was done good. I just wish it hadn't happened.
Yeah. But fortunately, Jensen had enabled their timer to track wormholes, so they managed to get down into the catacombs and survive the pulsars.
Right.
And then slide to the new world to go after him.
Mm-hmm. And Maggie jumps on board pretty quickly, too. You know, they're like, this is what happened, blah, 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 blah. And then she's like, let's get him.
It's the moment where Rickman told Maggie that you know, some civilians had broken in and killed him. I think she did an all right job there. You know, she's not immediately just going to break down and cry. She's not that kind of woman. But, you know, I think the actress Kerry Ward did a great job there as Maggie. She has a moment. She really does.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to talk about. Like her, in general, her acting is... It's not very, like you said, she has her moments. It's not very consistent, I guess, is what I'm saying. You know, like she's up and down as far as her line deliveries and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, we know, you know, like she was hired for some obvious reasons, you know, to bring in a certain demographic, you know? So it's, you know, but she does eventually go on to become a much better, more rounded out character, you know, definitely more likable eventually. But yeah, in the beginning here, it's like, oh, this is really rough, you know, but she, like you said, she does have her moments.
You know, they manage to get to the new world. They tell Maggie what really happened with Rickman. So they go after him. But, of course, Rickman escapes.
Yes.
And now we're moving the story forward. This is how the story's going to go forward. Mm-hmm. Rickman has the coordinates of Earth Prime in his timer, so they need to go after him to not only stop him from brain juice sucking other people, but to get the timer back so they can get home.
Right.
And I think that's a good way to sort of keep the story moving, you know? I guess they had decided that just going from world to world to world, trying to find your way home, was getting a bit old. We need to sort of add something else, another element to the story to sort of keep them moving forward. Which
I suppose.
As we get into the next few episodes of the season, I think we can make a decision whether or not this is worthwhile.
Right. Yeah, like I've always said, when they introduced the Cro-Mags even, because now, you know, Cro-Mags were supposed to be a recurring character. Eventually, it will happen. And now we got Rickman as a recurring character. When they introduced these things, it's like, I've always said, we don't really need a villain throughout the whole series, because it's the world that is the villain that changes every episode. It's like, how do we deal with this world? You know, how do we get through this world without, you know, missing the slide or losing our lives? So like, I'm just like, I wasn't like, it does give it more of a refresh. It does definitely change the show to a more action movie, because now they're tracking down this killer. You know, that's the whole point of the show now. We're tracking down this killer. Wherever he goes, we're going to get him, you know? So the tone of the show definitely changes, because now it's not just exploring other worlds. Now it's after the bad guy. And like I said, I think that if they had not, like, if they had just had more alt history worlds, really delved into what alternate dimensions could look like. It might not have needed the refresh. It might have been just good as what it was, with alternate histories and parallel, you know, like ideas and thoughts and whatnot. You know, like for me, it was that's what, if they had stuck to that, maybe it would have been okay.
I agree. But we do get a great scene, a nice heartfelt goodbye to the professor by the whole group.
Yeah.
We got Remy singing again, and then everybody saying a few words. I think if there was anything that threw me off here, I think it might have been Jerry O'Connell. He was a little stilted in this scene.
He did, yeah. When he was trying to cry, it just did not look authentic, you know?
No. He had that one line, too. He says, I'm going to miss the hell out of you. And I was like, it's almost as weird as Arturo yelling out, confound you.
Right. There should have been so much more that he should have said, you know? Yeah. So much more. Because, like we said, he was like a father figure to him, you know?
Yeah.
So there could have been so much more emotion there.
Well, Sabrina Lloyd was killing it.
You know, she was killing
it. She had the tears.
It.
She had the flowers there. I thought
I liked what she
great.
Said. Yeah. But some other people, and I saw this in reviews, how, like, Wade says, you know, I don't believe in goodbyes. And then later she says goodbye. And I'm like, come on. Really? I mean, that's such a nitpick. And she's freaking mourning for this guy who was like a father, you know, not maybe not a father figure to her, but a close, you know, friend and confidant. You know, you don't think, like, when you're in a situation like that, you're going to say things that, you know, like when John Lennon was killed, you know, when John Lennon was killed, they immediately went to Paul McCartney and, you know, like to see his reaction. He was like, man, that's a bummer. You know, like, he's not thinking about what he's saying, and people picked up on it like, oh, he doesn't care about Lennon. Yeah. He's this and that. It's he was in shock. He didn't know what to say. Same thing here with Wade's character. She's in shock. She's like, I don't believe in goodbyes. But then, like, everyone's saying goodbye. She's like, goodbye. You know, it's just in the moment, you know?
It's quite raw at the moment.
Yeah. You know?
I've had no time to process. I'm
in
the morning.
I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. But all in all, it was a good scene. I did like it.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, it was. Very well done. All right. So now this came up when we were doing the Paradise Lost episode. I saw this and it was how John Rhys-Davies was told that his character was going to be killed off. You know, it came up during that because it was like in the behind the scenes stuff that I had found in an article or something. And I thought, well, I'll just save it for Exodus, obviously.
Yeah. Cool.
Basically, you know, like when your character's killed off in a show, it's a big thing, especially if you've been a recurring, if you've been like a main cast member for 2.5 seasons, you know, so they, you know, you take you into the office or whatever and they say, hey, you know, we're going to be killing off Arturo this next episode. You know, I want to let you know, but you know how they did it? To John Rhys-Davies, this is the level of disrespect that he had garnered.
Don't tell me they just like sent him the script or something without telling him.
No, they didn't even do that. They did even worse. They were filming that Paradise Lost episode, and one of the, I forget if it was a producer or one of the people on the set, just while they were, after they were done filming a scene, one of them called out and said, hey, John, remember that story you wrote, that big two-parter? Yeah, we're going to kill your character in it, okay? That was it.
Wow.
Just like that. In front of everybody. In front of everybody.
Not even a private meeting.
Not even a private meeting. Just like call it out right there on the set. And like what I read was that, you know, the mood just changed. Like everyone was like, what the heck? You know, like I can't believe they just did that. You know, like just said it like that. It was just, oh, so disrespectful, you know?
That is. That's not cool, man.
No, definitely not cool. And then we come, you know, some of the messages in time talk about this as well, is about why did John Rhys-Davies want to leave and all this. You know, and like, you could find a whole lot of this stuff all over the place, but if you look on Dimension of Continuity, there's a lot of this stuff, you know, behind the scenes stuff where you can read more about it. He was always very vocal about how the show could be so much better. You know, that was one of his things. He was always, you know, saying, this needs to be done. This needs to be done. This could be so good, you know? So what happened was a couple of years ago, when Sliders was just starting out, I guess John Rhys-Davies was at a party and there was a Fox executive there, and, John kind of embarrassed him. Like he took him to task for some things and really, you know, made him feel like garbage, you know, like whatever he was saying about the show, you know, made this Fox executive just feel terrible, you know, like really dressed him down. We fast forward to this season and that Fox executive has moved up the chain to become one of the heads of Fox executives. And he's in charge of Sliders. And now that he's taking over Sliders, basically his thing is, you know what? Get him out of here. I don't want him on here anymore. And that's why he wasn't going to leave. He was fired by this guy is basically how it worked.
That's not right, really.
No, it's not.
I mean, because you hear about it all the time, especially with long-running and successful TV shows, is that the actors themselves want to get into, like, a bigger part of the making of the show. So they become writers, or they become directors of episodes, or they become producers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that John Rhys-Davies really like the show.
Yeah.
And he would want to move up. He, you know, if that was into writing, as we know, the first part of this story was based on a story by John Rhys-Davies.
Yes.
It makes sense that he would try to become a producer or something like that, you know, invest his own money.
Yes.
In the show because he believes in it. And you've got these Fox executives just throwing him down because they don't want to listen. Fox is going to do what Fox does.
Exactly.
And it's a real shame.
Yeah, it was just like a revenge thing by this one guy, you know. Yeah. It's like, that's not what was good for the show, you know, but it's this revenge, you know. Yeah. And like John Rhys-Davies did say after he had left the show that he would come back to it if they would let him write a couple episodes. So he was very interested in writing some intelligent scripts, but they were not going to have it. So it never happened. Now, I've got this thing here that I got to tell you about, okay? This was a good ep. These were good episodes. These two episodes. However, there is a thing out there, and apparently there's more than one, called Exodus Excised. This is now this one comes. This one I'm going to talk about comes from EarthPrime.com specifically, but there are other people out there who did this back in the day. They took Exodus and they recut it to make it into a different type of episode. And I watched this one. I remember watching this one years ago, and then I rewatched it just yesterday, you know, in preparation for this, for the podcast. And I gotta tell you, it's good. All right, it's really good. Most of the problems that we have with the episode are taken care of with this new cut. Now, it takes the two-parter and it cuts it down into one 45-minute episode.
Okay.
They get rid of a lot of stuff. So they get rid of, I'm not going to go through the whole list because there's a huge list of all the changes they made, like major, major lists. But one of the big things that they get rid of, Rickman's brain sucking is gone. Totally gone. It's out of there.
Not surprised.
Okay? He's just a bad guy. Okay. He's just a bad guy, which is great because it really does tighten up the episode. Also, they get rid of the first encounter the Sliders have with Maggie, you know, right after they find Yarabik. They get rid of that whole scene completely, and I'm so glad they did, because they don't need it. Later on, when they're in Yarabek's office, it's just natural that Maggie has already been ordered to find out what happened to Yarabik, and she happens upon these guys who are, you know, ransacking his office or whatever. So it makes much more sense. It tightens it up again. The scenes with Rickman and Maggie when he was saying, find those sliders, that's been all trimmed up. They get rid of a lot of little lines here and there that aren't needed. Like, we didn't need to know that Maggie used to be a fighter pilot and now she's not. Like, those things, they cut those out. The interrogation scene is cut in half. Some of Rembrandt wandering around the base trying to find his way out is cut out. There's a lot that they just take out, and just it makes it so much better, you know? They took out a lot of giant world, so there's not a whole lot of giant stuff in there, you know, which, like you said, you didn't really care about. The pulsar thing is changed around a little bit to make more sense, I guess. The world that they're on doesn't blow up at the end like it does in the real episode. So there's some changes to the story there. There's no reference to Jensen and Maggie being married at all. So a future romance feels a little bit better than it did, you know, in the final one where Quinn knows that she's married. In this one, there's no relation to them at all. Yeah. So there's a lot more. There's a lot more to it. I would check it out. You know, if you've never seen it, if you've recently watched the Exodus 1 and 2, check out Exodus Excised. You could find it pretty easily. It's on Vimeo by EarthPrime.com. One of the guys over there did that. And it's, like I said, it's really good. And when you watch it right after seeing Exodus 1 and 2, you see like how much better paced it is, how tight it is. And it's just a much better, it's like a much better episode now.
Yeah. I think we, should probably post a link to that on our Facebook and Twitter as well. So definitely. People can find it. I definitely want to check that out now. I think I might watch that at some point, this week.
Yeah, it was really good. It really was good. Oh, they cut out the whole thing about Rickman wanting to get slave labor from the natives. You know, that's taken out as well, you know.
There you go.
I was very impressed by it. I remember watching, like I said, years ago, but then like watching it now right after seeing the regular episodes, it definitely gives you a better feeling about the episode. It's really good, really good.
Awesome.
Oh, I should mention also, Arturo's death, the whole scene, that's changed a little bit. It's not as the bullet was going like in slow motion so much, they cut that out. Like they made it normal speed, so it's a much better death scene. It's not as drawn out. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's where I'm bound.
Someone want to say something?
Yeah, I do. It was great knowing you, Professor. So unique in so many ways. And you could be cantankerous at times. But I know it was because you cared about us. Then when we get back home, I'm gonna write a song for you. Something classy, righteous, so that people won't forget you.
I'd like to say something. I don't believe in goodbyes. Not really. I can't believe that everything we are and everything we've done just disappears. I think our spirit, it's like a river. It goes somewhere. And I know in my heart, I'll see you again.
I never would have been the student I was without your guidance and love. You taught me there are no limits to the imagination. We're a true adventurer. Now you're the greatest adventurer of all time. Goodbye, Professor.
Goodbye.
We're gonna miss the hell out of you.
All right, well, let's get into some messages in time.
All right, so messages in time. We're just gonna do them all in one big batch here. Like I said at the beginning about the pulsars, people are saying, you know what? Pulsars don't look like that. And they don't travel in groups like that either. They said, besides radiation, that's not even the biggest thing. With a pulsar, there's a big thing about gravitational pull. So if a pulsar was coming close to Earth, the pulsar would be destroying things gravitationally, not just radiation-wise. So there'd be a lot more damage than, you know, just radiation. And then like you had said about the giant world, they were saying, you know what, people can't be 100 feet tall because they would be crushed under their own weight. And there was a huge discussion about why it couldn't be and why it could be. And they were talking about cells and dividing and, you know, a whole bunch of stuff that I was like, this is above my head. I don't even know. But yeah, there was a lot of discussion about the giant world and why it wouldn't really scientifically exist.
Yeah, there's no real science behind it.
Yeah. Now, like what I said, what I was thinking when I read that stuff is what this next person said. He said, you know what? It's just a show. I don't really care about the accuracy. They can make pulsars, whatever they want. They can make 100 foot people. This is a show made for entertainment. It's not meant to educate, you know? And I kind of agree with that, you know, because it's like, you know, I'm just looking for entertainment. I'm not going to get my scientific knowledge from Sliders or a TV show like that. You know, I'll go to Bill Nye the Science Guy for that. That's, you know, that's where I'll get my stuff from. Well, you know, more places than that. But I'm just saying, as an example, you know, like if you want scientific, you know, education, you shouldn't go to a sci-fi show for it. I mean, you know, you don't go to Star Trek to be educated sci-fi or educated in science. You know what I mean? So I can understand what he's saying. I understand what he's saying. And I also understand the other side of people who want intelligent program, intelligent sci-fi. But like, I didn't know anything about pulsars. Like if someone hadn't said they don't look like that, I wouldn't have known. I just was like, oh, they look weird, you know? I don't know anything about the science side of that stuff, so it's like, whatever, yeah. I'm fine. There was one woman who was very funny. She She was like, she was thinking they got rid of Arturo for being too old, you know, and she said, I guess I'll just have to transfer my affections to Remy, even though he doesn't have the sexy accent or that professorial air about him, but they'll probably get rid of him too because he's old too. You're funny, lady. I like you.
Yes, little. Would you know that he is the only recurring character for the entire series?
Yes, exactly. So we got Wade. They were talking about Wade saying, you know what? Wade's woman enough for us in here in the form. We don't need this Carrie Bimbo is what they called her. You know, we don't need her. And they're like, my cat emotes better when she's hacking up hairballs. You know, I was like, whoa. They did say, and I thought this was would have been a neat way to go, but they would never have done this. They said it would have been better if the replacement actress for Arturo would have been an older actress, someone like a Kate Mulgrew type. You know, and I was like, oh, yeah, I could see that. Someone with a little bit more, you know, wisdom under their belt, you know, not, you know, I agree, but they never would have done that because it wouldn't have brought in the people that they want to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's see. There was also back then, before this episode ever aired, someone had leaked the script and they had it on the forum. And, people were saying, oh, I don't like the idea of this Rickman, you know, sucking, you know, brains out. It's like a vampire. This giant world that's stupid because people can't exist that tall. Giant rabbits. What's that all about? I hope this script is a hoax. And unfortunately, it wasn't a hoax for them. But yeah, they were thinking, oh, please let it be a hoax. They were theorizing about Rickman. They said, maybe he's an alien who created the pulsars on his alien world and they're attacking Earth. Like, that's far out there. That's far out there.
It's a little convoluted, yeah.
Yeah, good on you, though. Good on you. They didn't like the idea of how it seems like it's going to be of just chasing Rickman world after world. A couple of people had mentioned that. And then they were wondering, and I wonder this too now, after they mentioned it, how did Rickman learn about using the brain fluid to, you know, save himself so that he could keep living? That's, you know, like, how did he come upon that idea? I don't know. Let's just try some brain fluid. I got this fungus in my brain fluid. Let's try someone else's brain fluid, see if it fixes it. Maybe it'll fix it. Maybe it won't. Who knows? It's like the eating the worm crap, you know? Hey, let's try this. yeah. So they were also saying about the timing machines on the pulsar world. It's like, well, you know, those are destroyed. So how does his timer operate if it's tied to those? You know, it goes back to the whole thing. Is the timer independent of the machines or does it work in tandem with the machines, which we never really get addressed?
Yeah, exactly.
There is a person on these forums called Ed Hall, and I don't really know who he is, but he's apparently someone pretty big on the forums. And he's the first one, apparently, who ever used the word Earth Prime on these forums. And they said maybe that's a tribute to Ed Hall because Quinn used for the first time Earth Prime in that episode. So they're saying maybe that's a tribute to him. I don't know. I hadn't been keeping track of if they had ever said Earth Prime before. But they said they said he hadn't. So, all right.
I think Ed might just, might be up his own ass there.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, he didn't say it. Other people were saying about it. Hey, maybe this is a tribute to Ed, you know? I'm like, I don't know. No idea. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure they've used the word prime, you know, to refer to multiple dimensions in different, series or different books or something like that, I imagine. But I don't know if they have. I don't remember ever keeping track of it. You know, like I never heard it before, I don't think. In Sliders. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Let's see. We've got someone who said, you know, that Carrie is not a bimbo in short skirts. You know, she's not wearing boob revealing outfits. You know, she's not some damsel waiting to be saved. She's a strong character, you know? And I just say, you know what? Just wait. Just wait, sir. There will be boob revealing outfits quite soon.
Man, even that military uniform was pretty accentuating on.
Did not seem like a
traditional. The chestal area.
Yeah, not a traditional military uniform, I don't think. They were a little bit disappointed because Wade was underused. She's becoming kind of a stereotype character now, not really individual. Like we said, the romance was very premature. They said, you know what, this is great because Rickman will be a running storyline. We'll have continuity. There's not going to be any more of the Disaster of the Week episodes, you know, like where just it's like a tribute to like a movie. And I'm like, nope. you're wrong. There's still going to be more of those. So you're just be prepared there, 1997 person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then as expected, you know, a lot of people, you know, they hate Arturo leaving. Why couldn't the executives negotiate with him and fixed his character, kept him on? You know, he's not old. You know, he's the heart of Sliders. You know, I'm leaving the group. I'm leaving Sliders. The scripts are terrible. You know, it's losing the fun because now it's all going to be hell bent on revenge. It's going to be too dark. You know, so there was a lot of outcry against Arturo leaving. Which, naturally, there would be.
I guess we can take solace in the fact that the Rickman things are only going to last for the rest of this season.
Right, right.
And then we're going to try yet again something new.
And, you know, I read, like, when you find that Exodus excise, there was a thing where the guy who did that said he had planned on also recutting the remainder of season 3 so that the Rickman plotline only lasted like 2 or 3 episodes, but he just ran out of time and never got around to doing it. So that I think that would have been great if they had cut it down like that to just a couple episodes and then solved that and then moved on to other stuff. It is what it is.
It is what it is. All right, so messages in time. Now, we had like a huge thread over on the sliders.tv forum, and there's just way too much there to get into.
Right, a lot of stuff
here. But if you want to see it, go over to sliders.tv, check out the forum there.
Yeah, we appreciate it because iReactions is one of our most prolific reviewers, and he posted a bunch of reviews of our last like 6, 7, or 8 episodes, and they're very good. You know, they're very, very good reviews. So, you know, check them out. I mean, I don't mean very good like he's like all like you guys are the best, you know, but like they're very like in depth. You know, they're very thought provoking. Like iReactions has a lot of good things to say. You know, he should do his own podcast too. You know, because he's got a lot of information there, a lot of good viewpoints, and they always do make me think of things too. I'm like, oh yeah, I never thought about that. Yeah, that's good. So yeah, definitely check it out. Sign up over there and check it out. The one thing he did mention was a little bit about, you know, how we had read that dramatic reading. We did that dramatic reading, and Russian Cabby Lottery Fan loves it. You know, and he's I used to be involved in a voice acting group a long time ago, and still have a little bit of ties to them. He said, you guys should, you know, read all of iReactions, you know, new Sliders scripts, which again, just not to keep plugging iReactions, but he's got some good Sliders Reborn scripts, which are just really, really well done. I really enjoyed reading those. And he's still putting out, I think there's like another 1 or 2 to come out still. But, you know, he had mentioned that, you know, that I should have done that with, you know, my old friends, you know, and, iReactions made a very good point, which, ties into the whole future here of Sliders as well. That, you know, if you're going to have people imitating Jerry O'Connell and John Rhys-Davies and Wade and Clavant, or I should use their real name, Sabrina and Clavant, you kind of get into this thing where you're imitating them and people can get distracted by the fact that, you know, well, it sounds sort of like them, but not totally, or it sounds really good. Like, you sort of get lost in that instead of like, you know, paying attention to the story more and paying attention to the delivery. It's like, oh, it sounds kind of like John Rhys-Davies, but not completely, you know? So he made a good point about that. I kind of agree. It would be hard to imitate them exactly and be, have everyone be completely satisfied with it. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. My crying man ain't that good, Cuball.
There you go. That was good. That was good. But I mean, like, if you, you know, maybe he could put the links up to the script in that thread, the ones that he's writing, because they're like when you read them in your head, you're hearing those actors anyway. And it's so, it's really good. Like when I was reading it, I was like, I could hear them saying those lines in my head. So it's like to have someone else try to imitate it might ruin it for you, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So anyway, check it out.
All right. So that was a good discussion.
Definitely.
A big two-parter that we've been leading to.
Yes.
And we're done with it.
Yes.
It's past. So long, Arturo.
I know. We barely
knew you. You shall be missed. Okay, so moving forward, next week we will be discussing 2 more episodes, Soul Survivors, and then The Other Slide of Darkness. Which were changed up, but The Other Slide of Darkness was, you know, about another 4 episodes or so down the line of Megascript. So we're bringing it back to where it's supposed to be. And looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting into the rest of the season.
I think I kind of remember these and I'm like, Yeah. Okay.
We'll see how we go.
Well, that is it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. Keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there. We'll get the link up for that Exodus excised as well. So, and we also got Dimensions of Continuity over there. We got earthprime.com. And of course, we list the active forum over at sliders.tv.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. It'll just take you a minute. You can click 5 stars and say, hey, Tom and Corey are just awesome at the Sliders Rewatch on the Rewatch Podcast. So that would be fantastic. All right. Thank you for joining me again, Tom.
Yep.
And I will just say, until next time, this is what took me away, and this is what will bring me back. I promise.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast. Sliders.